I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, lordsofpain.net. Wherever you may be listening, Doc says.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the mania era is bringing terror on radio. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast. Chat, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania era, the book of sports entertainment, and of the doctor's orders on lordsofpain.net. On lordsofpain.net. Hello and welcome to the Doc Says podcast on the Chair Shot Radio Network. I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, author of the WrestleMania era book series, detailing in all their objectively subjective glory the greatest wrestlers plus matches and rivalries of all time. And wherever you may be listening, thank you for making me a part of your day. To those traveling to Chair Shot with me from Lords of Pain Radio, a special thanks to you. To the Chair Shot listening audience hearing my voice for the first time, you giving me a shot is genuinely much appreciated. I'm entering my 7th year now as a wrestling podcaster, having hosted The Doc Says since 2013 on lordsofpain.net, where I've written columns and recaps for 15 years. A little bit about me, I am a licensed physician in Flair Country, and while going through my professional schooling, I used to write about wrestling for LOP as an escape from the various facets of the human body and the plethora of disease processes that can afflict it. Then I published 2 books about wrestling when that escape proved effective into my early years of practicing. I was introduced to the host of The Outsider's Edge here on The Chair Shot about a decade ago through LOP, and it was through them and former podcaster-turned-wrestler Jordan Fox that I did a couple of guest spots here. Then opportunity knocked, and here I am. More about me some other time, I suppose, as today's focus is really on All Elite Wrestling, with a few Money in the Bank thoughts sprinkled in at the end. Double or nothing. Anticipation was through the roof. How'd it play out? Let's talk about it. First, I want to set the stage by letting you know where my headspace was at pre-start time. I thought AEW couldn't have asked for a better pre-double or nothing shot in the arm than announcing their TV deal with TNT last week. Then, a little bit of card-specific momentum was lost when Pac versus Adam Page was canceled. You see, my fandom has been very WWE-centric for most of the last decade plus, up until a recent dive into the worlds of New Japan, the revamped NWA, Impact Wrestling, and Lucha Underground Season 1. And when you're sucked into the WWE universe as much as I was, things like the rise of the Elite are largely lost on you. Pac drew me to Double or Nothing because I loved his run as the King of the Cruiserweights on 205 Live. Still, one of my favorite wrestling shows, if that gives you any indication of my personal, rather simple tastes in pro wrestling television. Losing Pac last minute reconfigured my expectations a bit. I still expected Jericho Omega to tear the house down, but was hoping it would tell a story in the ring that it largely didn't tell from January to Friday night. I still expected Cody versus Dustin to be the emotional core of this show, much like Cody versus Nick Aldis was All-In's psychological anchor. I still expected surprises. I still expected a show-stealing performance from the Lucha Bros and the Young Bucks, who I was actually seeing for the first time. I still expected a wildly fun and creative battle royal. I was still hopeful of some reputation establishing, for me anyway, women's wrestling, so expectations were not so much tempered by Pac's loss, but he was probably going to be, for AEW in general, in the early stages, what I like to call a fan anchor, who is perhaps not your favorite wrestler, but who is undoubtedly a wrestler who you respect so much that you'll tune in to watch him or her. So one of the things I needed from this show was a new fan anchor to emerge. All of that having been said, let's talk about the show, and then I encourage you to share your thoughts with me on Twitter, at TheDocLOP. Pause for effect, man. Damn. That was an amazing show. That was one of the best wrestling shows I can ever recall seeing, and I'm just feel honored as a fan to have seen that. I'm going to take you through my thoughts. I just finished watching the show. I got home, jumped on here, and on the way home, I'm trying to organize my thoughts because I have so many. I'm not going to be able to get them all out this week, so I'm going to sort of take you through my stream of consciousness. I wrote a bunch of notes down. I'm going to hit it up sort of in order, bounce around for a few topics here and there based on some of the happenings from earlier on in the evening. But just overall impression, I thought that they really knocked it out of the park. I thought that there was so much that we all felt as though they needed to accomplish with this thing. And, you know, it's going to take a little bit more time than I'm giving it with this knee-jerk response type show to assimilate the various different aspects that AEW really hit on the head with what they needed to do and with the things that they still need to flesh out, work on, and explain a little bit better. I think that as we begin the journey with the pre-show battle royal, the casino battle royale for a title shot on the line, that was one place where I thought we might get some major surprises, but there were no major surprises. Probably the biggest thing to come out of it was the performance of MJF, I think, was just tremendous. I think he set himself up to be the kind of guy that we're going to look down a couple of years into the future and see him as being one of the top stars in AEW. He's got a lot of that Chris Jericho sort of attitude and flair about his personality. He's able to communicate, as we would learn later in the night during a promo segment when they unveiled the championship. He is very proficient with a microphone in hand, and he reminds me of The Miz earlier this decade, where you're probably not going to get the best kind of in-ring performance from him just yet because he's so young, but he's got the gift of gab. He's got the ability to engage you verbally. So I thought MJF really stood out in the Battle Royal. I thought the cult of personality of the Battle Royal, the clash of this various different types of people, of various different types of people you don't always see in a mainstream professional wrestling promotion, it did stand out to me during the Battle Royal, and I think it would come to inform something of a really strong opinion of mine later in the night. I think the pre-show ended up serving, particularly during the Battle Royal, as it gave AEW production team members an opportunity to get their feet wet because they needed it. The Battle Royal was chaotic. Not everything worked out in terms of what they wanted to do with the graphics and the presentation of a different sort of concept in a Battle Royal. So that might have played a big role, but I thought some of the production type things, audio type things with Justin Roberts, graphic type things when they were rolling the dice and figuring out which suit was next, those types of things stood out to me as a negative. I was thinking, okay, this is a promotion in its infancy, and these guys working together in the truck, so to speak, are going to need to get it together before this show officially begins at 8 o'clock. And they ended up doing that incredibly well, because I thought one of the strengths of the night ended up being production value. I was really, really impressed with the production value of AEW tonight. I thought that was one of the things going in that we knew they needed to address, and I'll say straight away, I thought that they really hit a home run there. There was a bit of that WCW aesthetic to it back in the day where you had the darker sort of tone and set. As the guy I watched the show with, my buddy Chris, who I went to the Crockett Cup with a month ago, he shared, I thought, an astute observation, which is that this reminds me of Monday Nitro. So production got cleaned up during the Battle Royal was another big thing that ended up being something I found to be a huge net positive for AEW tonight, but the Battle Royal allowed them to work out the kinks. And then, of course, the winner being Hangman Adam Page. This was my first time really seeing Hangman Page in the ring. I don't think he gave us... There was not a lot of opportunity for him to showcase what he can do, but I thought this was a chance for him less to show what he could do physically and more to try to connect emotionally to show what kind of it factor that he has to show off his personality. And, you know, without a promo, without the ability to verbally communicate. It was always going to be on body language. It was going to be how well he sold the knee injury. It was going to be on how well he reacted when he won to the final moments. I thought that his little, the climactic moment of the match when we thought MJF might have gotten him, for him to flip into the ring and nail that clothesline and win the Battle Royal, sets him up as a big-time player. A lot of rumors about him. Earlier in the year, there was a big contract discussion regarding him and NXT. They were going to bring him in and they were going to push him straight to the top, and that we could have seen him in NXT championship matches by the end of the year if this route with AEW hadn't taken place. So he was considered to be one of those guys that for AEW was going to get pushed to the forefront potentially and very quickly. And here we see that being the case. He's going to face Chris Jericho for the World Championship, which they unveiled later in the night. A beautiful belt, a beautiful, beautiful belt, an awesome-looking championship title. I love it. It's one of my favorites I've seen introduced in a long time. It looks prestigious. It looks the part. Now it's going to be Adam Hangman Page and Chris Jericho battling for the opportunity to be the first person to hold it. And after tonight's show, a tremendous show, then I think that that belt is automatically going to have a lot of cachet. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see that match, and I'm excited to see what becomes in the months leading up to it of Hangman Page. I think that we need to see more of him. As the night progressed, I didn't really catch the other pre-show match, so I'm going to skip on to when the show began. And a couple of observations very early on. I thought that the decision to bring Justin Roberts to the promotion proved to be very well thought out, because that guy, when he was in WWE earlier in this decade, I sort of saw him growing old in that role like we saw Howard Finkel do, and I thought he had the chance to be much like Jim Ross supplanted Gordon Solie as the greatest announcer of all time. I thought maybe we had the opportunity to see someone like Justin Roberts reach that point with Howard Finkel, overtaking Howard Finkel. I think that highly of Justin Roberts' ability to set the stage for a match with his in-ring announcing. I thought he did tremendous with it. I thought that turned out to be a great get, and it made the show feel bigger. It made it feel it made it feel much more on a level that could compete with who they are ultimately trying to compete with, rather than it coming across like maybe one of their competitors that don't have the kind of production value that AEW brought to the table tonight. Justin Roberts was, I think, going to potentially prove to be one of the most underrated acquisitions from AEW's first 6 months. The opening match, I thought, did two things. The first thing, and this became a theme of the night, is it showcased just how much tag team wrestling is going to be at the forefront in this promotion. This was a great start to the show. It was one of those borderline four-star matches, if not outright four-star matches, that just brought the energy that you expect of a hot opener. They built as the match went along. They showcased all of the various different wrestlers, and they did it well. They maximized their minutes in their 13 to 14 that they got, and that's what you want from an opener, and that's really what you want from tag team wrestling in general. In my opinion, you want it to be able to have the opportunity to showcase, no matter how long it is, no matter where it is on the card, it needs to be given the chance to prove that it's a worthy part of the big picture. Not just, you know, contributing fun action, but it needs to feel like there's something at stake. And when you build a match over 8 minutes and it's all just rest holds and it's pretty slow and unimaginative, then you don't really get to accomplish anything, because that makes it seem like it's filler. But when you have competition, and competition is the theme across the entire show, and competition is really what's driving and informing the in-ring action, that's, I think, what when Cody Rhodes and all the other AEW representatives that you see in the media and all of the power players in the promotion behind the scenes, when they're talking in interviews about this is going to be a very sports-centric type of promotion, I think really what that means is it's just putting competition at the forefront, putting winning and losing at the forefront of what goes on between the ropes, bell to bell. And SCU versus this tandem from OWE was incredibly athletic, was incredibly competitive from start to finish. It felt like everybody involved was trying to make the best impression possible. And when it all boiled down to it, I didn't know who was going to win because they did such a good job of keeping you guessing. And that is really, I think, where modern pro wrestling shines brightest with its in-ring focus, is you can tell stories in the ring that you don't necessarily need much backstory to appreciate. You go to a movie, maybe you've seen the trailer, but outside of that, I mean, you don't know exactly how it's going to play out. They have a chance from the beginning through the end to tell the story that informs the entirety of the runtime. And with a tag team match that lasts 13, 14 minutes like this opener, you get the opportunity to, for each team involved, for every one of the six individuals involved in this case, for them to tell you a story across the runtime of the match. And I like the fact that that's the type of tag team opening contest that we got. Is it was a tag team match. It made very good use of the six-man format, which is the other point I wanted to make. But it got to this point with it where toward the end of it, man, I mean, it was starting to feel like, holy crap, I mean, if this is the type of match we're going to see set the tone for the evening, then everybody else has got a lot to live up to. So kudos to those six. Kudos to just the general presentation of it. This was the first time of the night where I made note of just how good the production value was for AEW. So as far as six-man tag team matches go, we saw two of them on the night, one from the men, one from the women. The women from Japan really killed it as well. That was probably my least favorite match of the night, just because by that point, you know, I'm a little bit, I need my little break, and it's just boom, 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 one match after the other with not a lot of breaks in between. And you start to get the sense with the length of the runtime for each one involved that you're going to be in for a long night. So this was kind of the match, the women's match, is the one that I used to ease in for the long haul. But I thought that both of the six-man, six-women tag team matches gave you the opportunity to be reminded of the upper echelon value of tag team wrestling, of six-man tag team wrestling in particular. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, something very underutilized in the last several years, the last few decades. Not only did tag team wrestling acquit itself well on the night, AEW set a tone with tag team wrestling with there being four tag team matches on the main card, but also I thought the women acquitted themselves very well. I said earlier on the show that going into it, I just needed something that established a reputation for these women, for me, because I really wasn't overly familiar with any of their work. I had seen some of the videos leading up to Double or Nothing online. I have some familiarity with Aja Kong from the past, but it's been, you know, it's been 20 years since I've seen an Aja Kong match, so I mean, I needed these matches involving the women to set a tone for me and to give me something to build future excitement about, and I thought that they all did very, very well. I was incredibly impressed with Aja Kong. I loved the four-way women's match. I thought that Awesome Kong coming back, I thought, really, how cool of a story would that make when they get to their TV show, when they get to TNT? TNT wants to tell stories. TNT is drama, or whatever their slogan and tagline is. How much of a nice real-life story is it that you have Awesome Kong get signed by WWE when they're about to start making a bigger push for women's wrestling once Triple H takes over as sort of the guider of the future, looking at talent development and getting into that arena in his career when he started putting on the suit and shifting gears out of his full-time in-ring role. She comes in, gets pregnant, has to leave. And after she leaves, goes through, and if I'm not mistaken, I think her child was stillborn. So it's an awful story of how things just really turned in her life. And then if you've seen her more recently, she's been on the TV series Glow And she's done really well. She's got some good acting chops. So for this opportunity to come up, for her to get the opportunity to come to AEW and establish for the women's division, this one of the bigger surprises of the night was her entrance, her coming in, and just a cool moment that they could tell that story on TNT in a profile during the TNT show, the TNT AEW show. That's the kind of thing I think you can do nowadays that is not utilized often enough, is saying, hey, yeah, I mean, this is Awesome Kong is a big, scary MF-er, and she can whoop your ass, and she can beat the crap out of you. And that, from one set of an emotional standpoint, is something we're going to focus on, and is something that we want you to realize about her. That's an important pro wrestling-specific thing. But in this day and age, pro wrestling is so open about what it is. If you do a profile on Kia Stevens, I believe is her name in real life, and you do a profile on the Awesome Kong transformation, then you've got multiple layers of emotional hooks that you can sell to an audience. And I think that's something that builds pro wrestling, that builds pro wrestling's profile. So all in all, thought it was cool that Awesome Kong came in. I really enjoyed Kylie Rae. She really won me over quickly, having never seen her before. The comment made about a more authentic Bayley, I get that. I think that comes across very well. It comes across as this is someone who's just got a little bit more inherent bubble in her personality than Bayley does. Bayley is very genuine, but she also is not the most engaging personality. Her face is not the most expressive. Kylie Rae's a little bit different in that regard, I think. I think Kylie Rae really showcased a personality that will catch on quick and become one of the bigger hits in the women's division. I thought Dr. Britt Baker, and they always, by the way, should call her Dr. Britt Baker. They should always refer to her as Doctor, because she's got a real heel vibe about her, and she's got the ability, in my opinion, to rise straight to the top as one of the big-time heels of the promotion at large. I thought Nyla Rose was unique and different, and the sort of the clash of titans between her and Awesome Kong that was a really cool moment. I thought the four of them worked their butts off and did a great job of establishing what women's wrestling will be. I'm anxious to see if Brandi Rhodes playing a role in Awesome Kong coming to the forefront, if that's going to be a partnership that we might see emerge, because I think that would be great. Brandi Rhodes has got something there with her character that they can really build up and draw from. Her being the manager of champions, perhaps, both with Cody and with Awesome Kong, I would love to see her and Awesome Kong have some sort of a relationship, for her to have a managerial role in Awesome Kong's career. Overall, I really liked how it all was presented. Allie being on commentary, who is gorgeous, by the way. I thought, you know, Allie herself brings a different dynamic to this women's division as the classic model-looking type. So they've got a lot of ladies who can bring a lot to the table. It's going to be very interesting to see how the division evolves, how it grows, what the championship scene is going to look like. I don't think we got much in the way of roster positioning in mind from this start like we did with the men. But overall, the 11 women that were involved in, or the 10 women that were involved tonight from the women's division, and not including Brandi and Allie, did very, very well to start establishing, as I said, I needed a reputation. So now we can build some expectations from there. It's going to be fun. It was at this point after the women's match that I automatically just took a step back and looked over at my buddy and was like, man, this is a really good start to this show. I'm not sure that we could have expected it to go much better for, you know, all the hype coming in. I mean, they needed to get off to a good start. By the time you get the Best Friends versus Angelico and Jack Evans, then, I mean, this is already shaping up to be a really good show. And then those guys go out there, and they have another great tag team match, another really good, strong effort. I really like Angelico. I really like Jack Evans. I always kind of dug Trent Beretta. And to see these guys go out and Chucky T, I mean, I thought, gosh, I mean, this is one of those matches that I would be happy to go back and rewatch again. And that's the thing about this card, is three matches in, you're thinking, man, I mean, could this have gotten off to a much better start? Very good performance. Great to see tag team wrestling in that spotlight. It's just really cool. I think one of the ideas that I had coming straight out of this second tag team match of the night is that between SCU, between the team from OWE, and then the Best Friends and Angelico and Evans, this has the makings for, since we didn't get this with the AEW Heavyweight Championship, I would very, very much like to see, personally, a tag team tournament to crown the first champions, because these guys, there's some real talent here. There's an ability here to tell some unique stories. I mean, my goodness, Evans and Angelico are absolutely fantastic. I mean, they have this unique sort of aesthetic to them, and the things that they can do are sort of an evolutionary rockers in a way. I mean, the tandem offense, I mean, you could say that about the Young Bucks as well, but I mean, there's just certain things. The look that Evans and Angelico bring is just something I think that they can cultivate and grow. And if this is a team that's here to stick around, then I'm glad to see it. And I mean, they did not win. The Best Friends won. They got the hug over. All that stuff went over well. The interesting post-match thing was, it looks like AEW starting fresh with something, because I didn't see, in my initial peruse of what people thought of the show, I didn't see any actual identification of the attackers once the lights went out and came back on. All the masked guys, and then the one guy who isn't masked, I couldn't really tell what it was all supposed to be, but it's intriguing, whatever it is. I mean, those couple power moves that they showcased, don't know anything about them other than they can do a couple of cool power moves, but, you know, that's the thing about AEW. This show needed to be a lot of things, and one of the things it needed to be was a show that, in giving you some answers, also asked some new questions. So we got that across the board, and including in the tag team division. Cody versus Dustin. This might have been my personal favorite match of the night. You look back and you think about those couple of years where it seemed like if they wanted in WWE to pull the trigger on Goldust versus Cody Rhodes, the opportunity was there. They flirted with it numerous times. It was in WrestleMania season when they would make those teases, and it just never came to fruition. We'd later come to find, as we saw these interviews leading up to Double or Nothing, is that WWE just flat out didn't see it as WrestleMania worthy, despite the fact that these two guys got over some of the most unique stuff that I think very few others in wrestling lore would have been able to get over. They still, in WWE, did not believe that a battle between Dusty Rhodes' two kids was a WrestleMania-worthy attraction. That goes to show you one of the things I think is terribly wrong with WWE in this day and age, because history will look back at Cody Rhodes versus Dustin Rhodes, and they will say, well, of course this was WrestleMania-worthy. And there's the proof. The presentation, the hype video package, the song that they chose about filling the shoes, the attention to detail in this match, the real hype surrounding it in the arena was amazing. The Dusty chants, it was emotional. I said earlier, Cody Rhodes was going to be the emotional core of this show, and he did it. That's exactly what he was, and this match was legendary. I think that it was an absolute match of the year contender. I think that blood really went to show. I mean, that's why blood can be so valuable in pro wrestling, and I'm glad that this promotion is embracing that, because to not have that is to lose a storytelling medium, a storytelling advancing medium that WWE, I get it, I get why they don't do it, but still, it's just going to give AEW the opportunity to stand out that much more when you're able to have that part of your playbook open to use. So what a gory bloody match. I mean, Dustin's blade job was, I can't think of many that were more gory than that in my 30 plus years as a wrestling fan. I think that Dustin Rhodes it's not Eddie Guerrero at Judgment Day 2004, but I mean, it's close. I mean, it's a wound, a gaping wound that just kept pouring blood out of it. It's one of the rivals some of the stuff that Shawn Michaels did. It's probably the second most nasty blade job I've ever seen, second to what Eddie Guerrero did in 2004. But, you know, what a performance by Dustin. That's not it. They're going to do the tag team match together. That was a great emotional moment. And, of course, the way that Cody treated this whole thing is generation versus generation. To have in his entrance this special Triple H-esque little throne sitting there and to take a sledgehammer to it was such a great touch. And I think it speaks to the fact that there is a fan base out there that is so disappointed with the way that things have been done at the top of the industry for a long time. And Triple H, special entrances, the Attitude Era still hanging around here 20 years after its end date nearly. And to see that so prominent and for Cody to take a sledgehammer to it symbolically to be, you know, the Attitude Killer worn across his belt in the verbiage written across his weightlifting belt. These types of things speak to the audience that has just been absolutely starved since CM Punk and all of his various forms of pipe bombs left WWE. The Voice of the Voiceless was his nickname. And that part of the audience he spoke to has gotten substantially larger than I think anyone's really given it credit for. That audience needed something to speak to them, and Cody provided it in a very overt way. The whole show provided it, but Cody Rhodes, for him to take that step forward with it, was, I thought, awesome and symbolic, and I love stuff like that in my pro wrestling. So kudos to Cody. Kudos to Dustin for really putting his heart into this match. Cody's best match, arguably. I don't know. It's certainly going to go down as a legendary performance. So many little things. The eyes, the talk of their eyes, the dusty chant, the natural flow of a Dustin Rhodes match. Cody bringing his unique gifts to the table as a performer, more as the from the standpoint of a character actor. That's his strength. He's athletic, but his strength, he's not a Kenny Omega type wrestler. Storytelling is what is the avenue through which he thrives, and him and Dustin certainly did thrive on the night. And it was also, I think, very much aided by the commentary. I will be very curious to hear what you have to say about the commentary. It was after that match that I looked over at my buddy Chris and I said, "Hey man, what's your temperature gauge right now on the commentary? Have you liked it?" Because at that point I had been thinking, you know what? I really like this commentary. This commentary is not off-putting. I find myself actively trying to tune in and engage with it rather than tune out from it like I often do with other promotions, with the big promotion, with other promotions around the world, really. They brought energy. They brought know-how. Not everything was word perfect, but I thought that what they did do is it just felt like three people sitting around having a conversation about the wrestling that they're watching. And that, to me, is the kind of commentary that you need. You need the guys to go to be excited. You need the guys to be knowledgeable. You need the guys to share in the story being told. But you also just need it to feel like these people have some sort of rapport with one another. They're not jarringly jaw-jacking with each other like you see in other promotions. This is just kind of more straightforward. This is what's happening in the ring. This is why it's important. This is our emotional reaction to it. This is the play-by-play. I really thought that the commentary was quite good. And that three-man booth, I like the role Jim Ross plays in it. I like the role that, you know, having the other two there to learn from him and learn some of the small details that a Jim Ross still has to teach, while also not forcing Jim Ross to play a greater role than I think he's capable of playing right now, or at least for the time being. So, you know, overall, just very cool match. Really, really thought that the commentary helped and did throughout the night. The Lucha Bros versus the Young Bucks. First time ever seeing the Young Bucks very impressed. This was an epic tag team match, arguably the most epic tag team match that I may have ever seen. So, kind of exhausted by it, to be honest, because there were so many times when I thought that the action was about to end and it just kept on going. If I wanted to be hypercritical, I could say maybe it went a little too far and it went a little too long. I mean, this was getting pretty late in the night. This was the point when you realize that, wow, okay, this is going to take us all the way probably to midnight. So for it to be that long of a show, this tag team match being as exhausting as it was, I was starting to get pretty tired. Anyway, the Dustin and Cody match was obviously very emotionally engaging. They did a great job of telling their story here. They did a great job of innovating. I want to talk about this match more after I've had the chance to rewatch it, because by this point, I think my overall impression of the show had just about been made. I was very impressed by this point. Everything else was just going to be icing on the cake. Excellent match, the type of thing that you could legitimately see being the main event of a show, and I think that's the statement that it made. Epic matches, which to me is a genre in pro wrestling, like ladder matches, they're the type of matches that exhaust offensive retinues. They go through such content that by the time it's over, I mean, they've taken that kind of emotional hook in wrestling, the art of the near fall, and they've about used up the night's total quotient for that. And, you know, epic matches are not something that you really see much in the tag team world. It's certainly not the background I come from in the tag team world. Even at its peak, the epic type matches in WWE tag team wrestling were not that. They were that was really more so for the gimmicks. The ladder matches in particular, that's where you sort of exhausted that sort of emotion and drama to get this sort of epic match where the near falls are coming like you would see in the main event of the biggest show of the year in the Tokyo Dome or in in one of the big WrestleMania venues. That's the kind of wrestling that you see there. You don't typically see that in tag team wrestling. So what a statement to make. What a match for them to make that statement by saying outright, look, tag team wrestling's going to main event here. Tag team wrestling is going to be at the top of the card. Tag team wrestling is going to have the opportunity to sell this show out, to be the reason why people come here to see this show. To me, that's when epic matches matter the most, is when they feel like everything is on the line, so that when those near falls come in the volume that they tend to in the epic genre of matches, then, you know, you can put your energy behind it. I thought we got to a certain point in this match where they almost pushed the limit a little too far, but I mean, what an epic performance, what an epic series of near falls and the moves that informed them. I thought JR did a good job of pointing out to fans like me who are sitting there thinking, is this a little much? Like, holy crap, I'm exhausted. I believe is something along the lines that he said, and that was the damn truth, man. Wow. So that left the main event, Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega, Alpha Omega 2, rematch from the big time Wrestle Kingdom 12 performance last year, the Tokyo Dome. Man, a lot to live up to for a lot of reasons, but a lot of it was because this show was so good up to this point. We already had two epic matches, Cody versus Dustin, the tag team championship match involving the Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros, and by the point when you get to Omega versus Jericho, you wonder, do we have collectively among us, the fans, the wrestlers, everybody in the back who's made this such a memorable production thus far, do we all have it in us to give for one more 30-minute period? And I thought everybody brought it. I felt the energy from the crowd. I felt like this was important. I felt like they made it important. I thought that the entrance for Jericho was tremendous, and it gave this just that added little bit of pizzazz that the main event needed to be engaging on that level. The action was, you know, very similar to what we saw in the Tokyo Dome last year. Maybe not quite as good, in my opinion, as what we saw in the Tokyo Dome last year, but maybe that's the late match snafu sort of standing out in my mind. They went for this counter sequence. It didn't connect. It was a little awkward in how they handled it in the immediate aftermath, and then they went right back and they actually did it again. So it was like a retake. And on the retake, they showed you what they intended to do, and what they intended to do, it actually, you know, it worked out very well and was quite cool. But maybe that's standing out a bit more in my mind before I can properly assess the totality of the performance. But overall, I mean, it didn't hurt me too much because I still loved that main event. I was surprised to a degree by Jericho winning. I thought that was one of the big stories coming out of the ending was, you know, he was the lone member of the Elite to not end up having that big victory. And actually, you know, even Jericho's victory took a backseat because Jon Moxley debuted, the former Dean Ambrose. And there, ladies and gentlemen, is likely to be my fan anchor I was mentioning before. I really, really loved Dean Ambrose in WWE, but I felt like many did that he was an untapped resource, that they allowed him to merely scratch the surface of what he was capable of in WWE. Speaking specifically of the main event level, I'm happy that he is there. I've always thought from the word go that it was a great idea. Psychologically, I think what happened was Dean Ambrose, when his heel turn was handled so poorly last fall in WWE, the announcement came of AEW, and immediately I think that guy went and did some soul searching and said, look, my contract's running out. This opportunity is there. This performance tonight really showcased that this is a guy who is hungry and ready to take the ball if someone will just blanking give it to him. So him, Jericho, Hangman Page, Cody, Kenny Omega, these guys are right there in the thick of things immediately, along with on the periphery, someone like MJF for the AEW world title scene. I think that this ended up being calculated, and I'll talk more about it on a future edition of the podcast. But you ran into a scenario where if the original rumor was true and they were going to do Omega versus Pac to crown the champion, well, maybe Dean Ambrose hasn't signed on the dotted line yet because of various things going on in his life. Roman maybe trying to get him back on board and all that jazz. But, you know, if you've got the opportunity to sign Jon Moxley, I think there's a lot of people out there that think like I do, that think this is a guy who just needs a shot at the top, a legitimate shot at the top, a strike while the iron is hot type shot at the top, the type of thing he arguably should have gotten on the road to WrestleMania 32 when he got so insanely over again and they yet again didn't pull the trigger until after he'd already cooled down. So he comes in immediately and showcases himself to be a real major player right at the top of the card. And if you want him in that spot, then I think the first feud's with Kenny Omega. That always seemed logical to me. Moxley, Omega, that'll build the reputation of Moxley in AEW. It'll probably help build the reputation of Kenny Omega to fans coming from the mothership to watch Dean Ambrose on a different platform. I don't know that you do that straight away for the AEW championship, so you pivot away from Omega as the first champion, and we'll see who ends up getting that. That's a topic for another day. Should it be Hangman Page getting that first opportunity, having his name attached to the first world champion in AEW's history, or should that be another feather in the cap of Chris Jericho and his long list of accolades? I don't know. I don't necessarily know the answer to that question in my own head yet, but I think Kenny versus Jon Moxley is a great way to go for that next phase of the first part of AEW's history. So overall, man, I thought it was a tremendous show. It's one of the best wrestling shows I've ever seen. I compare it to something like a WrestleMania more than I'd compare it to something like a TakeOver. NXT, which we'll talk about next week, I mean, that's going to be a big comparison point in my mind, is if you judge it based on the type of show NXT runs, then I don't know. But if you judge it compared to the more traditional pay-per-view, this was one of the best traditional pay-per-views I've ever seen. I think it instantly is in the running. Every match was good. Every match brought something to the table. Every match, I think, played a role in establishing what AEW intends to be, which is a competitive pro wrestling entity, man. They're going to really go after this thing from in-ring competitions, what drives the ship. Plenty of personality was allowed to shine through the competitive in-ring environment, and I thought it was awesome. So please tell me what you thought. Give me your thoughts at the Doc LOP. Going to take a quick break, come back with a few Money in the Bank thoughts, and then wrap it up for the night. So thank you very, very much for your time. Thank you for joining me on this first chapter of AEW history and on this journey through an alternative wrestling promotion coming to the forefront in what I think was an incredibly major way. Before I sign off, I have a few thoughts I wanted to share about last weekend's WWE Money in the Bank pay-per-view. On this show, I tend to fluctuate back and forth between a variety of topics and in a variety of ways, FYI. And I was genuinely excited about Money in the Bank's strong card. For the most part, I thought it delivered. I watched the show in a rather strange order. I turned it on a half hour late on account of putting my kids to bed, so I chose to watch it from the beginning and saw the Money in the Bank for the women first, as a live viewer would have. What a performance from the women's division. It gave Dana, Ember Moon, and Naomi the chance to shine on account of their unique physical gifts, and all three stepped up and delivered some aesthetically memorable moments. Carmella's injury story, a classic Money in the Bank trope at this point in its history, added an emotional layer to the presentation that I thought completely elevated this effort above the three prior women's Money in the Bank matches to date. Mandy Rose was tremendous in her role, excelling to such an extent as the antagonist that it set up perfectly the climactic moment of Bayley, who had a very nice outing as well, meeting her at the top of the ladder and giving her what I promise you will go down as one of the iconic visuals in Money in the Bank lore, her stare down of Mandy and Sonya before pushing them off the ladder. The Bayley victory was cathartic given how much stop-start she's been through since debuting on the main roster in 2016. So, after finishing that match, I attempted to fast-forward through backstage happenings, but there was a malfunction. Long story short, I wound up picking back up live because the ability to fast-forward didn't exist on my Fire TV, and the live show at that moment was the video package for Lacey versus Becky. So I ended up with Bayley winning the briefcase, then immediately went into the next chapter of the night with the women's division, which worked out well in the end. Lacey versus Becky was given an aura from the little intangible things that can boost a wrestling match's presentation. The hype video was very good. The special entrance for Lacey and the pictures on her boots elevated something that was otherwise just a chance for a new star to get some shine. Lacey flashed a lot of potential early, both with her personality and her athleticism, and then faded with some sloppiness late, but the entirety of the presentation with her, I thought, was a net positive. The ensuing other match, Becky versus Charlotte, fed nicely into the completion of the one-night story of Bayley's return to the Promised Land, which was just an awesome piece of work all around from WWE. Very well handled. Years from now, one of the most memorable things about Bayley's career will be that stare down to end the ladder match and the cash-in an hour later. That's 2 years in a row with the same night cash-in, and 3 out of 4 dating back to Ambrose cashing in on Rollins in 2016. So, interesting. Rollins versus Styles was fantastic, utterly fantastic. I need more of that from WWE. Two elite workers being given the platform and the spotlight to excel and maximize what they can achieve together in the ring, that's just where the magic is in wrestling for yours truly. On my preview last week, I said this, quote, "I want to see them tell a story that reflects their history together, perhaps emphasizing that Rollins has studied and knows the playbook of Styles so very well, as exemplified by his countering AJ's offense for much of the first third of the runtime, followed by Styles cunningly adapting, but all the while, I don't want it to be slower paced. This is a match that represents the modern era of wrestling, and I'd like to see a pace and a match structure that takes that into account," end quote. It wasn't exactly that, but it was very similar. They gelled as they went along, The counter wrestling was marvelous, and the end result was a more engaging backstory away from challenging Kofi versus Bryan for WWE Proper's Match of the Year frontrunner. Speaking of Kofi, his defense of the title against Kevin Owens couldn't live up to Rollins Styles, which was actually a discussion point I'd brought up in reverse a week ago, thinking that KO Kofi would go on first and that Rollins Styles would then get the tired crowd. I'm glad it worked out how it did. KO and Kofi worked hard and had a really nice match while Rollins and Styles were given the full chance to tear the house down, and did. The main event did its best to challenge the Universal title bout for the night's most exhilarating outing, with all involved working their butts off in one of those classic stunt brawl variety ladder matches that WWE booked so well. But WWE went back to the well with Brock like someone in a relationship blinded by the sex to the point that they can't see how toxic it is for the rest of their existence. We each have our bones to pick as fans, and mine, dear newer listeners, is part-timers, among whom Lesnar is the most aggravating on account of his place at the top of the card. If this Money in the Bank win for Brock is to help further cement Seth Rollins as the Universal Champion, then I guess I'm for it. But if I get another Brock domination spree, I'm freaking out on that nonsense, folks. But oh well, his presence last Sunday made me that much more excited for AEW's first show 6 days later. So, that will do it for my debut here on the Chairshot Radio Network, ladies and gentlemen. I thank you for your time. Before I sign off, if you want to discuss AEW or WWE with me on social media, please hit me up at TheDocLOP on Twitter, where I regularly post my thoughts throughout the week. I also encourage you to check out the other shows here on the Chairshot Network. As for me, I'll be back next Sunday reacting to next Saturday's NXT TakeOver. So until then, have an awesome week. Always use your head. And remember, The Doc Says is your audio prescription for high-quality analysis in a nice and neat 30-ish minutes. Your next appointment is Sunday, June 2nd. Be well until then.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the mania era is bringing terror on LOP radio. This is the prepare for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This is a 5-star podcast. Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania era, the book of sports entertainment.